Now, Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Thanks so much for being with us. Another beautiful day in Victoria. Welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. How are you, Michael?
Well, thank you. Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning to you. I know you're well, but you also came in shocked and carrying a great big judgment. We're going to talk about the story of BC government social workers in hot water, serious findings by a Supreme Court justice. Walk us through this case.
Well, the decision is enormous. It goes on for hundreds of pages. The basics of it are these, though. Back in 2009, the couple involved in this case, who were only described by their initials, so as to protect the children that were abused, separated, and there were four children. There were, looks like, two boys and two girls, ages 7, 5, 3, and 1. And this case became what is sometimes called a sort of a high-conflict divorce. Very quickly, the two parties were involved in a highly contentious family law proceedings. In the course of that, the mother of the mother of the children reported to the Ministry of Children and Families that she had a disclosure of sexual abuse by the husband. Now, that's where the things started to go off the rails.
So she'd gone to the ministry. Walk us through that part again. What she'd done?
She went to the Ministry of Children and Families social worker to report the alleged sexual abuse of the children.
Had this family been involved with a social worker prior to her making this distinction or utterance?
They had not. And what happened in this case is that the, for whatever reason, the social workers quickly came to the conclusion that her claims were malicious and untrue. They concluded that she was making up these allegations in order to further her contested family court proceedings with her husband. And ultimately, the judge found that the social workers became completely closed-minded and came to this conclusion that she was untrustworthy and then just doggedly maintained that position for several years.
Michael, would it not be advised, or would a social worker not advise the woman to go to the police?
In fact, she did go to the police. But in this case, one of the lead social workers decided to improperly inject himself into the police investigation, phoning the police investigator and advising the investigator that he believed the woman to be untruthful.
The father did this.
The social worker did that.
The social worker did this.
The social worker, having formed that closed-minded conclusion that the mother was untrustworthy, took it upon himself to phone the police investigator and express that opinion, which caused the criminal investigation to go off the rails and not proceed either.
So then the officer who took that information is embroiled in this as well?
Yes.
Or who made that decision?
Yes. I guess the way the judge described it is that the social worker's decision to intervene and tell the police officer that he believed this woman to be untruthful caused sort of a change in the police investigation, and ultimately the man wasn't charged as a result of the social worker injecting himself into the police investigation. To make matters worse, the ministry received then an anonymous complaint that the mother might be harmful to her children. On the strength of the anonymous complaint, which the judge found to be false, the ministry then apprehended the children, took them away from the mother, and wound up ultimately providing them unsupervised to the father, who then continued to sexually abuse them, having had the children placed in the father's care by the ministry. Things got even worse when the ministry had to go to provincial court to deal with the and explain to a provincial court judge the apprehension. The ministry misled the provincial court judge, did not tell the judge about the allegations of sexual abuse by the father, and by misleading the court, that state of affairs continued for some time when the judge finally found that the children continued to be sexually abused. in the company of the father, unsupervised, as a result of the ministry lying to the court.
How did this finally come to light?
Well, it finally came to light as a result of a lawyer taking on a Herculean task. Jack Hittrich was the lawyer who acted for the mother in this case. And the Supreme Court proceedings were extremely long. The first part of them where the judge concluded that the sexual abuse did occur, that the father was lying, making false allegations against the mother. That ultimately went on for, I think, about 90 days of trial over months of time. That wasn't the end of it, because even after that, the mother then sued the province of British Columbia for their handling of this matter. The province of British Columbia denied the mother's claims and contested that case at great length. That latest part of this, where the judge only earlier this week, finally in another 251-page judgment, concluded that the province had breached its duty of care to the children, that the judge concluded that the ministry had lost sight of their duties, professionalism, and their objectivity, finally concluded that if it wasn't for JP, the mother, I wish to add that JP assumed and carried out the duty, the director's statutory mandate to protect her children. If it were not for the Herculean efforts of JP, the mother, the children would now, through the fault of the director, be in the custody of their father, who sexually and physically abused them.
So how long did the kids end up staying with the father after all this had occurred? The ministry removes the kids from the mother, and because of an anonymous call, and they're now with the father. How did that situation end, and what happened to the kids?
It sounds like the kids wound up with the father for a number of months, being permitted to be with him unsupervised for periods of time, which actually was in contravention to a court order. There's an issue about whether the ministry had ignored or sort of overruled a court order. The apprehension had occurred and was upheld by the court as a result of the social workers providing misleading false information to the judge. Just absolutely shocking conduct. The ministry, for the 60-plus days of the first trial, with the evidence coming out about the conduct of the father, maintained their position that he was blameless and the mother was mentally ill and shouldn't be believed. They only, after 60-some-odd days of trial, finally reversed their position back in 2012. This was after several years of maintaining the position that she wasn't to be believed and that the sexually abusive father was blameless. The ministry maintained that position through most of the first trial, and then in the trial where the decision just came out this week, the ministry and the provincial government continued to deny the claims that the ministry had acted improperly. The judgment is absolutely scathing in its conclusions about how the ministry conducted itself, or the director of Child, Family, and Community Services conducted herself, how the employees of the ministry conducted themselves. And I should say, this is incredibly difficult work. I mean, that should be said. And in these sort of cases where there are these competing high conflict allegations, you've got one party saying this person is sexually abusing the children, you have the other person saying that person is mentally ill and isn't to be believed and is just saying these things in order to further their position. That's an incredibly difficult thing to try and sort out. One of the problems, which I think is revealed by this decision, and the judge describes it in terms of the person becoming, the social workers becoming just closed-minded, is when you try to combine the functions of performing some investigation and making a decision, it is subject to that problem of sort of tunnel vision. People sort of get one thing in their mind, right? She's lying, he's telling the truth. And then everything they do and the decisions they make are from that perspective.
We're going to hold that thought there because I want to talk to you some more about this and get some listener feedback. What do you think about this case that you're hearing about? 250-386-1161, *1070 on your cell phone. You can email us, talk@cfax1070.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Stay with us.
Join the CFAX conversation on Facebook. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. If it's the Callwood Crawl or a mess on the Malahat, we've got your back with more traffic more often. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Hi, it's Wendy from All Victoria Vacuums with a Vac Fact. Did you know vacuuming was once a two-person job? One person to man the hose and the other to work the hand crank. At All Victoria Vacuums, we know vacuums inside and out. So why buy from a big box store when you have experts to help you make the best choice? We carry top brands like Dyson, Miele, Sebo, Ricard, and built-ins like Canavac and Nilfisk. Get the facts from All Vic Vac, the island's only authorized Dyson repair shop at Hillside and Cedar Hill for 38 years.
What's one of the largest purchases you can make for your home? Flooring. Let Pacific Coast Floors Carpet One help you make a healthy decision. Choose their healthier living carpet installation system. They even carry a hardwood floor that purifies the air, called Pure Genius. It's like having three trees right in your home. Visit PacificCoastFloors.ca and ask about their beautiful guarantee at 2374 Millstream Road in Langford.
Pacific Coast Floor Coverings.
Hey, it's your anniversary in a week, right?
Yep.
Getting the missus anything special?
Well, I don't know. I got time. I'll think of something.
7 days later.
Happy anniversary.
No way. Already?
Yes.
Some things are closer than you think, like the JBI Pub and Restaurant at the James Bay Inn. Try their three-course dinner menu and experience great home-style cooking with fresh ingredients made from scratch. The JBI Pub and Restaurant at the James Bay Inn. Really good, really close. Corner of Government and Toronto.
Okay, so how many phone numbers have you memorized?
Maybe a couple.
A dozen?
Probably zero.
And what if you had to add a phone number to your brain?
No thanks.
Understood. That's why Bluebird Cabs made an app. Just download it to your smartphone, and when you need a cab...
Here it comes.
Man, that was quick.
When you need a cab, think Bluebird Cabs.
Call 382-2222.
Hey, you said no new phone numbers.
Sorry, habit.
Busker's Festival starts tomorrow, and it runs for 10 whole days of fun and excitement across downtown. There'll be all sorts of street performers that you can go and see. Don't forget to check out the CFAX and Cool FM stage, where there'll be unforgettable performances showcased every single day. Find out all the showtimes at CFAX1070.com.
How many calls do I have to make just to find a reliable contractor to renovate my kitchen?
Have you tried EasyJobQuote.com?
Easy what?
EasyJobQuote.com. Call them to have an experienced estimator meet with you and go over what you need done. They submit your reno to qualified contractors who bid on your job and choose the bid that suits you. You can write your own review when the job is done, giving you a voice in the market.
Finding a contractor is stressful. We can help. Save time and have less frustration on your next renovation. EasyJobQuote.com.
What can a licensed professional from Houle Electric do for your home or business? Upgrades, adds, moves, changes of panels, sockets, rewiring, testing, troubleshooting, preventative maintenance, repairs, inspection, renovation, and much more. All Houle Electric technicians are licensed professionals. They're constantly upgrading and they're bonded, so you can feel comfortable with them in your home. Find Houle on Facebook, Twitter, and at www.houle.ca.
CFAX Sunday, the biggest stories of the week, revisited with all your favorite hosts, Sunday morning at 8 on CFAX 1070. When you need to make sense of it, it's Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning and welcome back to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. We're talking about this horrific case, a story of BC government social workers in hot water, serious findings by a Supreme Court justice. We're to the phones now, and Ron. Good morning, Ron. You're on CFAX. Morning, Ron.
Of course, it's an appalling case, and more horrific because it's dealing with innocent children. In terms of the ministry's response, though, it's like any other bureaucracy. when the stakes go higher and the possibility of blame goes deeper, they adopt the old circle the wagons technique and will hold their position stubbornly until somebody is up the chain high enough to be worthy of public condemnation is sacrificed. I don't think you're going to see Stephanie Cadu removed from her post unless the Premier really, really loses confidence in her. But I'm sure that not a social worker, but maybe a director will be fired over this.
Yeah, that, you know, that's funny you mentioned that, Ron, because I was just speaking with Michael off mic here saying, do you think heads are going to roll over this? So let's put that to him. Thanks for your call, sir.
Well, I sure would hope that there are changes, and I think the caller is correct in his sort of assessment about how some of these things are responded to. As I see it, part of the challenge that was demonstrated by this case is when you've got sort of this investigator or social worker also trying to make ultimate decisions about what's happening, you seriously risk losing objectivity. And this case demonstrates the value of having an independent decision maker, having the judge hear the evidence of the parties and then making an objective decision about it. Just long experience tells us that if you don't have somebody who's removed from the investigative process reviewing things, you will, with some regularity, wind up with this closed-minded approach.
Hi, Elise, you're on CFAX. What do you think?
Well, I don't know how it would get so far as to have one social worker have that much control, I guess, over the situation. And since the ministry investigates anonymous complaints and concerns from people, isn't there some sort of tool or test or something that they can administer with the children to really find out whether they are being abused without just having to take one of the parents' words for it?
Mm. Yeah, it seems like a really weird process.
I mean, I'm sure that there are psychologists involved, and it would seem that they would have that at their disposal.
Right, like a tool box to be used. Let's put this to Michael.
Well, first of all, here, this is more than a case about a single social worker. There were a large number of social workers involved in this case. They're listed and named in the judgment. It goes on for half a page. But what happened is, as an institution, they formulated this position that the mother's a liar and the husband was telling the truth, that she was mentally unstable and he was
innocent.
And
what did they base it? What do they base that on? Because Elise is talking about, you know, psychologists being brought in and people making an assessment, or perhaps social workers have that training.
Well, here, ultimately, after the judge, the first part of this trial that went on for some 90-some-odd days, did review that sort of evidence. There was some medical evidence about damage to the, I think, genitalia of one or more of the children. The judge looked very carefully at the nature of the allegations made by the children. The father's position was that the children were coached by the mother. The judge found that that simply wasn't the case. The judge looked and analyzed very carefully the nature of the specific allegations that the children, who were very young at the time, were making. They were referring to things which the judge found, I think most people would find reviewing them, very unlikely to be the sort of things that would be coached into them.
Hi, Cynthia. You're on CFAX 1070. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
I think it's outrageous that social worker did not immediately remove the children and take them to a doctor to be assessed. Do you know that's something they will never forget for the rest of their life?
Mm.
And that social worker, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't deserve to be working as one. They take children away for something far less behavioral. But that, and say the mother is insane, I think, honest to goodness, it really bothers me that the children weren't put first.
Mm, yeah, Cynthia, it's a highly emotional case. Michael, you are reiterating it was more than one social worker. So there was the initial social worker. Thanks for your call, Cynthia. And then others concurred with that social worker.
That's right. It sounds like the first one of the lead social workers sort of set the tone for the matter and was involved in it multiple times, writing a letter to the court supporting the father in the child custody proceedings, telephoning the police investigator indicating that he thought the mother was lying. But it wasn't one person. This is not a case about one rogue social worker. This case involved a large number of people, and it went on for a number of years. They just got collectively this tunnel vision, and that's the position they stuck with. On the other hand, when they got an anonymous false complaint, they apprehended these children and wound up ultimately giving them to the father.
A horrific case, but I'm going to put this out there. What if in a case like this, I won't speak specifically to this, that a mother or father has been known to lie in the past, that there is every reason to disbelieve a person due to prior statements?
These are incredibly difficult cases, and I don't want to give any other impression other than that. Social workers are often overworked, they're understaffed, and they have an incredibly difficult job. What they need to do is to try to keep an open mind, and they need to be truthful. When they're going to court and providing information to the court, it needs to be complete. Courts rely upon it, and if they do what they did in this case, the judge found that they intentionally misled the court about the background, you're going to wind up with these sort of horrific decisions being made.
Mm-hmm. So not only was there misjudgment, you're honing in on the fact that they tried to keep it under the rug.
The judge found said the director had demonstrated her lack of regard for directions from this court, the Supreme Court, and her legal obligations to make full and frank disclosure to the provincial court in the apprehension proceedings. The social workers and the director did not disclose to the provincial court. It said, the director did not advise the judge who heard the various applications in the proceedings of the alleged sexual and physical abuse, nor did she disclose the circumstances in which the supervised access order had been issued.
When it comes down to it, what is BC Supreme Court Justice Paul Walker calling for?
He's found that the Director of Children and Families, sort of the province, is liable for damages to the children and the mother. How much those are will be the next stage of this process. They will be enormous. The court costs will be enormous, millions of dollars. The province contested this thing vigorously. The proceedings went on for months. Only by the sort of the Herculean efforts, not only of the mother, but of the lawyer who pursued this on her behalf.
What happens to the social workers?
That's unclear. That will be, I would hope this is going to be a matter of sort of serious political debate about what direction they're being given, what approach they're going to take. Do they have adequate resources? What's being done to ensure they're providing full and frank disclosure to the court, and are there enough judicial resources to properly review these things promptly?
Tough case. Thank you so much once again for walking us through the complexity. Appreciate it.
Thank you.